Chapter 13. Turnaround. Dordan took a deep breath. Tension and fatigue had put a tiny tick in the corner of his right eye and a tremble in his liver-spotted hands. Ron was struck by how grey the old doctor's skin had become. It reminded him, painfully, of the skin paint used by the sleepwalkers of the Geryon and Till, and of the wood ash dust that the old Nalwood land communities of Tanith had used to anoint bodies for funerary rites. He'd never made that connection before. He made a point of not thinking about Tanith, unless he had to.
"You'll live," said Dordan.
Ron nodded. He looked down at Kant. The trooper was unconscious in a chemically induced coma, his neck wrapped in bindings and counterseptic wadding. His face was drained of blood, colourless white rather than Dordan's dead grey. Dordan and the new man, Colding, had worked for 2 intensive hours to save Kant's life. No one could yet tell what brain damage might accompany the catastrophic blood loss of the throat wound. Ron patted Dordan's arm.
"There's nothing I could do for the others," Dordan said.
Ron didn't turn to look at the wrapped corpses of Cabri and McTally. 2 kings dead, another severely wounded. They had paid a high cost already guarding the Feguth, Etogar. And that was without counting Eder and the crew personnel and the poor bandsman fool that the Circle must have slain on Menazoid Sigma in order to worm his way into their midst.
"Get some rest," said Ron.
Dordan laughed. The infirmary was busy. In the aftermath of the void fight and the commotion aboard, there had been a lot of minor injuries, a few concussions and broken bones. There was still work to be done. Colding was nearby, washing Kant's blood off his hands in a metal sink in preparation for the next patient. Ron walked over to him.
"I understand the technique that saved him was your idea," he said.
Colding stared at Ron. He wasn't used to being spoken to or even acknowledged by many of the regiment.
"It seemed expedient," he managed to say.
Ron nodded. He held out his hand. Colding blinked. He hesitated for a moment, because he'd only just got his hand scrubbed ready again. The hesitation was too long. Ron lowered his hand and nodded.
"It's appreciated," he said, and walked away.
Bandauer entered the Medicaid suite, squeezing past the walking casualties, queuing for treatment.
"Where is she?" he asked the orderly Chaker. Chaker pointed.
Elodie was sitting on a cot in the corner, her arm in a tight, packed sling, a compress against the back of her head. Ron watched Dauer cross to her, kneel beside her, embrace her gently. Dordan had said that the woman had torn shoulder muscles and taken a mild concussion catching the child. Brave. Selfless. There were more reasons than just good looks to admire Elodie Dutana. Ron kept watching as they spoke, quietly. He assumed she was telling Dauer what happened. Ron tried to remember the last time anyone had looked him in the eyes, the way she was looking at Dauer. Down the far end of the infirmary unit, where it was quieter, Creed and Juniper were sitting with Yonsi while Kurth checked the child over. The little girl was perched in a cot and seemed to be enjoying the attention. There was no indication she had been remotely upset by her adventure.
"I owe you," said Kalia, coming up beside Ron quietly to stare at Yonsi.
Ron shrugged.
"I was protecting the arch-enemy, Faithhead, not the little girl," said Ron.
"Right."
They both tensed. Merrin had just walked out of the side ward where he'd been checking on Costin's graze wound. Creed had crossed to Elodie and Dauer to murmur a few words, and she turned as she saw Merrin.
"Oh, shit," said Colia.
Creed walked right up into Merrin's face. They could feel the hatred radiating off her.
"You didn't take the shot," she hissed.
"What, Tona?"
"Don't give me Tona, you spineless idiot. You had a shot and you didn't take it."
"What?
That bitch tell you that?"
Merrin sneered back, jerked his head in Elodie's direction.
"No," said Creed. Juniper told me. Juniper said you just kept your coward head down. She's a faithing liar.
Creed went for his throat. They crashed into an instrument stand and scattered a stack of steel bowls. The bowls clattered across the deck. Some of the civilian casualties started to wail in alarm.
Not in here! Kurth roared.
Kalia and Ron stormed forwards and got hold of Creed. She fought back in a frenzy of arms and legs as they pulled her away from Merrin.
Get off me! She shrieked. He's not worth 10 hours in the tank, Creed, Rowan growled.
He's not, agreed Kalia.
Creed stopped thrashing and shrugged Kalia and Rowan off as they relaxed their grip. She glared at Merrin.
You saw what she did, Merrin cried. I want her charged.
Grow some testicles and shut the faith up, Merrin, replied Rowan.
Merrin pointed angrily at Kalia.
He didn't care. He's a faithing bloodfather. He didn't attack me.
I was just pulling Creed out of the way, said Kalia.
What?
Asked Merrin, puzzled. Kalia's axe rake of a fist slammed Merrin into the infirmary wall. The impact demolished a wire shelf and smashed a row of glass bottles.
Have you all lost your minds? Kurth yelled. This is a sick bay. Stop it!
Working together, Creed and Rowan managed to pull Kalia's muscle-dense bulk off Merrin. Merrin had his arms over his head and face. Blood was squirting out of his nose. When he realised the fists were no longer raining down, he began to get up, slipped, and then rose to his feet. Kalia lunged at him again, but Dower had joined Creed and Rowan to act as anchors, and they wrenched Kalia back between them.
What in Throne's name is going on in here?
Hark demanded as he pushed into the infirmary.
It's just a misunderstanding, said Rowan,
hauling Kalia back.
Yes, Creed agreed. We thought Merrin was a human gacking being, but we misunderstood.
They were attacking me, Merrin squawked. There are witnesses. Charge them.
It won't happen again, Rowan said.
There are witnesses,
Merrin insisted, outraged.
Show me one, said Ron.
He looked around the room at the shocked faces of those present.
Anyone?
He caught Kurth's eye. Kurth shook her head. Hark frowned.
Will this happen again?
He asked.
No, said Kalia. No, said Creed. We're done.
Dower punched Merrin square in the face and laid him out on the deck.
Call her a bitch again, and I'll gut you, you Tanith bastard, he said.
He looked at Hark.
Now we're done, he said.
With the fight finished, the Armaduke had closed with the fleet. Packet and cargo exchanges were underway, with lighters ferrying supply loads across. Small ships were also attending the 2 wrecked Imperial ships in search of survivors. Gaunt went to the ship's communication chamber. Spica was in attendance, along with Edwine. Hololithic generation sockets built into the deck manufactured crackling, full-sized images of Lord Militant Cybone, Fleetmaster Crago, and several senior Navy and Munitorum worthies from the fleet complement.
"I am gratified to see that you survived the transfer," Gaunt said to the image of Cybone.
Emperor protects,
Cybone replied without enthusiasm.
The question is, said Crago,
an immense being whose biological bulk appeared to have been reinforced and supported by massive augmetic armatures and plates.
Will this mission survive? Is your assignment still viable?
Yes,
said Edwine, simply. Crago snorted.
I believe you should abort and turn around. Do you? Your vessel was compromised and attacked from within. The conjunction was tracked and discovered. We took significant losses.
But we won, said Gaunt. We drove them off. There is no reason to suspect that the fleeing enemy has any intelligence about our target.
And if they do?
Asked Craigle.
If they have other agents aboard your ship?
Then we ride to our deaths, not you, said Gaunt. It would be patently ridiculous to get this far and then turn around without solid evidence of compromise, said Spiker. We identified the means by which they detected us and tracked our position during shift. We will be alert for it in future.
Is there another issue here?
Asked Edwine.
We must consider the obvious, said Sybon. Why did their capital ship spare you when it had you cold?
It had exhausted its present charge on the poor Libertas, said Spiker.
The answer is more obvious than that, said Edwine. I have replayed the data feeds of the fight's closing moments. Your gun line was 8 seconds from range. The arch-enemy capital ship had no wish to measure its worth against the Sepiturna and her warp escorts. The demon ship ran rather than fight you. If it had stayed long enough to murder us, you would have achieved status effective and atomized her.
We would have tried, said Craigle. The Adeptus Astartes is paying the Navy a compliment, Fleetmaster, said Sybon. I recommend you take it gracefully.
Craigle nodded his mountain peak of a head. The picked feed crackled and jumped slightly.
It was no false flattery, said Edwine. I believe it perfectly explains the arch-enemy ship's decision.
Then I approve the continuance of the assigned mission, said Craigle.
Did all the specialist equipment survive? Asked Spiker. I trust no part of the requisition order was aboard the Domino or the Libertas.
It is all intact, said Sybon. We are transferring it now to your outer bays.
You'll need to clear a primary bay to take the Adeptus Astartes vehicle,
Craigle told Spiker.
It's no bigger than a gun cutter, but it is massively armoured, and it will need a station of its own, or your inertials and gravitics will suffer.
I'll redistribute the launch payload, said Spiker.
How long before you can make shift?
Asked Sybon. We're running repairs now, said Spiker. The materiel transfer should take another 5 hours or so. We'll be ready then. When the hololithic presences blinked and dissolved away, Gaunt turned to Spiker. My compliments on your combat command, he said. Thank you for not getting in the way, said Spiker. He looked at the huge Silver Guard warrior. That was just flattery, wasn't it? He asked. That bastard ship should have killed us dead. Edwine shook his head.
It was the truth as I saw. I suppose it is possible that the enemy capital ship detected something or someone aboard this ship that it decided it did not want to kill.
If that's true, we'll find whatever they were sparing, said Gaunt. Has it occurred to you it could be your prisoner? Asked Spiker. The one they were trying to assassinate, you mean? Gaunt replied. Were they? Gaunt laughed. What are you saying, shipmaster? This whole business was an elaborate ruse to make the Fegus story more credible.
It is possible, said Edwine.
He glanced at Gaunt.
But I think they were running for their lives.
The central landing deck had been cleared. Launch Artificer Goodchild, the senior flight deck officer aboard the Armaduke, saw the deck lamps begin to rotate and flash as the inbound craft approached.
Pressure trembled as the environmental envelope adjusted. He signalled to his servitor crews to stand ready for landing attendance. The craft sailed into the primary landing, backlit by the local star, which was glowering outside the mouth of the bay. Goodchild had heard other flight artificers describe such vehicles, and he had reviewed the archived data, but he'd never seen one in the flesh before. Robust, like a flying tank, it was finished in the chapter colours and insignia of the Silver Guard. Silver grey, white and imperial yellow.
"We used to go to war," a voice said from beside him, "and launch 1,000 of these into the void. 100,000 to demolish a fleet."
Goodchild turned to find the massive Iron Snake space marine standing beside him. He made to bow.
"Do not bother," said Holofernes.
They watched the Adeptus Astartes warcraft settle in to land on the arrestor clamps.
"But there are not many left," Holofernes said, uttering what seemed like a heartfelt sigh as he gazed at the craft. "Like us, I suppose. I miss those days, the great wars. Can you imagine 10,000 of those launching from a supermassive?"
"I cannot, sir," Goodchild admitted.
"No," agreed Holofernes. "Even the thought is too terrifying."
"How old are you?" asked Goodchild.
"Old enough to remember," replied the Iron Snake, "and young enough not to care."
"You sent for me?" asked Felix. Gaunt looked up from his desk.
"No," he said. "I sent for her." He pointed at Madalena. "You can wait outside," he added. "Shut the door." Felix half-saluted and backed out of Gaunt's quarters, closing the door. The life ward was left alone, standing to attention, staring at Gaunt.
"And?" she asked.
Gaunt got up.
"There's something about you I can't..." he began.
"What?"
she asked.
"Nothing. I was thinking aloud and it wasn't appropriate."
"Not appropriate?"
"No," said Gaunt.
"Do you want a drink?"
"No,"
said Madalena. Gaunt poured himself a small sakura.
"Do you at least want to stand easy?"
Madalena relaxed her pose slightly.
"Why did you want to speak to me?" she asked.
Gaunt looked thoughtfully at the untouched drink in his hand.
"He will ruin me," he said.
"What?"
"The boy will ruin me. I want him gone. Pack your things and escort him off this ship. Transfer to the fleet and passage will be arranged back to Vergast. It will take some time, I'm afraid. The battle fleet isn't in the business of passenger shifts."
"Not acceptable," said Madalena.
"He will ruin me," Gaunt repeated. "So I hardly care for your opinion." That fight began, and suddenly all I could think of was that my son, might be in danger. The thought unmanned me. I came to find him.
It's understandable," said Madalena.
"I know it is," Gaunt snapped. "That's the point. He's my son, and I'm going to care about him, even though I barely know him, and didn't know he even existed until this voyage began. He's my flesh and blood, and having him here damages me."
Oh, please, try imagining."
Madalena licked her lips with the tip of her tongue as she thought.
"Your concern for him will compromise your ability to lead. It will undermine your confidence. It will make you fallible, and perhaps force command or tactical decisions that are unwise. It could weaken you and soften you and take your edge away."
"There," said Gaunt. "That wasn't so hard, was it? So, get him off my ship and take him home. I cannot have him on this mission."
"Many of your men, your officers, they have brought family and loved ones with them.
It is a calculated risk. The company bond indemnifies personal loyalty over personal safety, and my men don't have to lead this mission.
True, she said. Though I think the issue is the same.
Thank you for your perspective. Now get the boy off this ship in the next 3 hours.
You will care about him wherever he goes, said Madalena.
What? Asked Gaunt. Will he get home safely? She said, shrugging. Will the fleet ship transporting him be attacked? If he returns to Vervenhive, will he survive the shame of being sent away by his famous father rather than being allowed to serve at his side? Will his chances for political advancement be forever undermined?
Be quiet, said Gaunt. I don't need to hear that, damn you. I didn't ask to know him. I didn't ask for him to be sent here.
He shot his drink in one swallow. She walked over to him, took the empty glass from his hand, filled it, and took a sip.
The point is, you do know him, she said. Now you're aware he exists, you cannot not know him again. Sending him away won't help. The humiliation certainly won't help him, personally or politically. Banishing him won't help you. This cannot be undone.
Yes, it no, Colonel Commissar. It cannot. You know him. You know he exists. Whether he's at your side or a sector away, you will be concerned for his welfare. He's your son.
Gaunt took the glass from her hand and knocked back the rest of it.
So, what you're saying is, you've ruined me anyway.
Madalena laughed. She took back the glass and refilled it, taking more of a sip for herself this time.
I suppose so. It wasn't my decision, and I'm sorry for it. It wouldn't have been my choice to send him to you unannounced.
She stared into his eyes.
Better you keep him at your side than wonder where he is. Better he stays and learns something from you before you die. Better you fight for his life than anyone else's.
Gaunt hesitated. There was an anger or a frustration he could barely articulate.
I take it he'll be staying, she asked.
Gaunt shook his head sadly.
This stuff, said Madalena,
holding up the glass and squinting at it.
What is it?
Sacra.
It's not bad, she said.
There's something, Gaunt began.
About me, so you said. And I believe you said such thoughts were inappropriate.
They are, said Gaunt. He kissed her mouth. She did not pull away.
That's definitely inappropriate, she said.
I don't give a damn, he replied.